Welcome to the 50 States Finish Line podcast, where we talk about running, road races, and all the ways running enriches our lives. I'm Pam, and I run half marathons in 30 states and have completed 5 marathons. Thank you for tuning in. You know, this podcast series is both about running in many different places, as well as giving ourselves many ways to define our fitness success. I am pleased today to be joined by a Seacoast runner who, from what I have gathered, stays active in every season of the year. I am eager to hear our guest's approach to what has worked for her and to hear what may be on the horizon on her race calendar. Welcome, Diane. Do you want to first tell our listeners a little bit about yourself as a runner?
Okay, so my name is Diane Levesque, and I live in Kittery now. Started running when I was 23 years old, and actually that's kind of I'm 68 now, and it's kind of an interesting story about how I started running. I was a smoker. I was 23 years old, and I was working in Madison, Wisconsin. And I started dating a doctor who was heavy into running. Mm. So one day he said, let's go out and run, you know, and I said, oh, I can't run, you know, I smoke. And he says, you can go running, come on. So anyway, I went out with them, we went running, and at the end of it, I said to him, oh my God, I said, I can't run, I'm a smoker, because I was quite spent. And he said to me, it's not because you're a smoker, Diane. It's because you're out of shape. Mm. And let me tell you something. If he hadn't been a doctor, if just anybody had said that to me, I would have thought, oh, you're so full of it, right? You don't know what you're talking about. But I totally believed that, and I kept on running. And I've been running ever since. So that was, I think, kind of an interesting way to start my career, having that major doubt about myself. And he was right, because even though I smoked for a number of years, I was still getting better as a runner.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of leads me to two questions. One is, so you were in Wisconsin. Did you grow up in the Midwest? Did you grow up in an active family? And then the other question, I guess, is like, did you end up giving up smoking?
Okay, so I grew up in New Hampshire, and my family was not active at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, they kind of made fun of the fact that I was running. Why do you need to do that? You know, you can do your house cleaning or whatever. So no, they weren't an active family. But I was in the Midwest attending graduate school. Okay. And so that's how I met the doctor, and I gave up smoking, interestingly, in 1992, and that was due to the development of the Habitrol patch at the time.
Okay.
I really had never really been that interested in quitting smoking, to be honest with you, because, again, I was running fine, but I was not competing. Mm-hmm. So I gave it up. I put the Habitrol patch on and never look back.
Good for you. Good for you. So it sounds to me like in those early days of running, it was really about maybe more kind of along the lines of fitness. And then in terms of racing, it sounds like that came a little bit later.
Yes, it did. My first race, I was back in New England at that point, and my first race, believe it or not, was Market Square Day, and I have a special fondness for that race.
Oh, we love Market Square Day.
So my first race was actually a 10K. When I look back on it now, I think, a 10K? What was I thinking, right? But I did it, and I remember I did it in 52 minutes.
Good for you, and it's hot. It's often very hot on Market Square Day.
I think that particular day it was rainy. But I do think it was hot too. So I ran that race, met up with a friend of mine, and she said to me, I said, oh, I ran the Market's, you know, Square Day race. And she said, really? She says, what was your time? And I remember it was 52 mm-hmm. minutes or something. And she said to me, oh, well, Mary, blah, 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 she ran it faster than you. And at that point, something clicked, and from that point forward, racing for me became all about competition.
Interesting.
A lot of people go out, they run races, and they think, oh, I'm just going to do it for the fun of it, just to finish whatever. And let me tell you, it was not like that for me. I wanted to compete. And I have to say that in my career, I was never an elite runner, mm-hmm. but I was an age group winner, you know, 1, 2, or 3 for all the years that I raced. Top 10 for sure overall. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed competing, but things are much different now.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I've aged, mm-hmm. and I think part of what happened was with the pandemic, mm-hmm. and the lack of in-person racing. Mm-hmm. It really affected my ability to compete because I wasn't competing. I wasn't running fast, mm-hmm. To keep up with what I had previously done. So I've kind of turned the corner on that.
Yeah.
It's been a humbling experience, I have to say, because I really did have a lot of success in my career.
You know, that's really interesting because I do know runners who have experienced what you've experienced in terms of being competitive and that really driving their running experience and then having to kind of recalibrate their running experience. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, when you say it was humbling, did you come to that acceptance easily, or what led you to that acceptance?
Well, first, I'm not totally at acceptance yet. Okay, so let's make that clear. I'm in that process.
And you know there are competitive runners out there that are like cheering, like, yeah.
That's right. And I, you know, there's a lot of things that have changed for me. First, you know, one of the things I see, I go to races now and my old crowd isn't there.
Oh, okay.
It's like something happened in those 2 years, right? Yeah. Where are these people? They've either stopped racing, stopped running, I don't know. And some, like our friend Sarah, have moved on. They've moved out of state. We don't see them as much. So there's that mm-hmm. aspect to things. And so it's the whole thing has been an adjustment. And mm-hmm. It's like I've set new rules for myself. I'm not traveling to races anymore.
Okay. So
I would travel out of state. Mm-hmm. If I was going on a vacation, I would plan it probably around a race like I used to do. But I'm not going to travel to Manchester even.
Yeah.
It's that bad. But I used to travel all over the state, all over New England, you know, get up at 5 a.m. and go to those races. And I just don't do that now. So I've adjusted my goals.
Take us back when you were an age winner. So, you know, what was the training like for that when you were competitive? And I would say I did a little research on you, and I saw that you were part of Acidotic Racing, which I think even just the name implies pretty turbo runner. So what was that like when you were kind of in that routine of training and being very competitive?
Okay, so Acidotic Racing, I'm still a member of Acidotic Racing. Okay. And Acidotic Racing actually is a very welcoming community. It's not as cutthroat as it sounds, but what they do, but Acidotic Racing, from my perspective, the emphasis is not on road racing so much as on things like mountain racing, snowshoe racing. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, so I participated in those series. And a lot of the club members would be there. And I think they're still participating. Mm. Well, I've kind of dropped out of that scene. But Acidotic Racing was fantastic for me in that they were very supportive in my engaging in these alternative types of races, as mm-hmm. opposed to the classic racing on the roads,
yeah,
which I did much of my younger years. But I was able, you know, as part of Acidotic Racing, to win USA Track and Field National Championship mountain. I was a national champion in my age group. When participating in that club. As far as the training, let me tell you something. I I am one. I like to run by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just make up strategies on my own. I would read books and mm-hmm. listen to what other people said. You know, I remember one of my training strategies was always to finish something fast. So mm-hmm. I might do a medium pace run, and then the last mile I would really step on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example, but I would just pick and choose my own things. Mm-hmm. But racing was really part of my training
mm-hmm.
For the next one.
Yeah. So I think that's helpful, you know, for listeners out there to know that you can do it. You can train alone. And also something like this acidotic racing, which takes kind of maybe that cross training and takes it into the mountains, takes it on trails. Snowshoe racing, that seems exhausting.
That is like, I am so happy I took up snowshoe racing. And really, it's very difficult, but I have to tell you, really, it's just one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm.
Buy yourself a pair of running snowshoes, and it's just running. And it's so beautiful out in the woods when it's snowing. Of course, we haven't had a lot of snow lately. One of my favorite all-time races is a snowshoe race that Acidotic Racing used to put on, and it was the Kingman Farm nighttime race, snowshoe race, where everybody was wearing a headlamp.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a surreal experience to be out there with a headlamp and watching all the headlamps in the field and in the woods, and it was fantastic. But we haven't had any snow to have one. But that is one of my favorite races of all time.
Well, hopefully if someone from Acidotic Racing is listening, and maybe also someone from UNH, because I think Kingman Farm might be a UNH property town of Madbury,
yeah.
might bring it back, because we would love that race.
Yeah, I think if there's snow, it'll happen, but we haven't been that lucky in the last couple of years.
So you've been a longtime runner. Do you do kind of any kind of cross training? Do you do other things to stay fit?
Well, that's interesting. I used to lift weights, you know, free weights a couple mm-hmm. times a week, but really I'm doing more, since I've been aging, I've been cross training more. And now I go to, I head down to the Y in Portsmouth and do some of their weight training aerobics classes mm-hmm. that I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing a lot of walking and hiking too, mm-hmm. not mountain hiking so much, but hiking with my dogs in the woods.
Nice.
You know, just trails. And I get so excited when I find a new trail, either to run on or to walk on with my dogs. So
nice.
I've been doing some cross training that way.
Nice. That's really nice to hear. You know, it sounds to me like you've had a lot of race experiences. Some people come in the studio and know immediately like their race stats, how many races they've run, their longest distance. Do you keep track of any of that?
You know, I used to. I moved from Rochester to Kittery
mm-hmm.
2 years ago. I threw all that stuff up. If I had known I was going to be on a podcast, I probably would have saved it. But I'll bet there's going to be 1,000 races. There has
really?
To be. There has to be. I mean, I would do 3 races in a weekend. So, there have to be. So, and I've done Mount Washington, I don't know how many times. I did the mountain running series, I don't know how many times. Snowshoe series. I do the New England racing series that was on the roads.
Okay.
New Hampshire used to have a running club series. I don't think they do that anymore. And then what else? I don't know. There's just so many that I've done. There was the all-terrain series.
Okay.
We had to run, you know, like a race on the track, indoor track, outdoor track. You had to do a half marathon. You had to do a snowshoe race, a trail race, a mountain race. So talk about traveling, right, New England?
Right.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, you put a lot of miles in your car and you get up early. But, all of those, yeah.
So it sounds like it was a pretty consuming experience doing all of that racing. And maybe post-pandemic, wanting, you know, still wanting to run, but maybe not to have it be so all consuming in your life? Because I imagine like three races a weekend, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, there's not much time when you're working full. I'm not working full time anymore, but when I was working full time and then racing all weekend, there's not much time for anything else. Let's face it. So now, you know, my goals aren't as lofty, and I'm more relaxed about it. In many ways, I'm enjoying my running more. What I do now is I almost turn my running into my own personal aerobics class.
Yeah.
Put on the headphones, and I love hip hop, rap music, and R&B. I'll put that on, run at that pace. That's a slow pace, but I enjoy it almost like I'm doing an aerobics class. I've changed my goals.
That's wonderful. That is really, really wonderful. Well, I think we'll take a short break. You are listening to the 50 States Finish Line podcast, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the 50 States Finish Line podcast. Diane, have you had any unusual experiences in your time of racing?
There is one that stands out in my mind, and some of the older runners might remember this because I think it was written up in a magazine, although none of the individuals involved were identified. But I was running the Mount Cranmore mountain race, and I believe it was my first time running it too. And I took a wrong turn, I think the second time going up the hill, because you go up twice. So second time around, I took a wrong turn and ended up on the wrong trail. And I was followed by two men who also took the wrong turn.
They were just following you.
They were following me. And there we were, confronted by two huge black bears.
Oh, my goodness.
Mating. They were mating. How often does a person see that?
Okay. I don't think ever.
And of course, none of the three of us had a camera. But there was a guy running. The oldest guy was from Hampton, and I, of course, was from New Hampshire. And then there was another guy there who was from Massachusetts, and he was terrified. This guy's name was Ken. He was terrified. He kept saying, he was pacing back and forth, totally anxious.
Because you couldn't go by them.
How they do it apparently is they go back and forth across the trail. So you had to time it just right. But he was terrified, and he said, oh my God, if something happens, my wife is going to kill me. I said, they're not paying attention, okay? Right. All we have to do is get by there. And the guy from New Hampshire, from Hampton, was saying the same thing as me. But this guy was terrified. Anyway, finally, we said the heck with it. And the two of us from New Hampshire just started running, and he followed us because he was terrified. That was just an outstanding experience. Who would have guessed? Anyway, I ended up being last in that race, but it just so happened that they had a raffle, and they gave away a pair of running shoes to the last runner, and that happened to be me. So I didn't mind coming in last.
I was going to say, the one time you don't mind coming in last. That is great. That is great.
Yeah,
I guess here in New England, we do have to think about nature and how it can impact the start of a race or the middle of the race or getting lost on a course. So it sounds to me like running, thinking back to when you started and that first conversation with a doctor, it sounds like running has really enriched your life in so many ways. And, you know, maybe you want to just tell us a little bit about that as you think about your running experience, how it's enriched your life.
Well, I think running is just, you know, being in the mental health business, it's just so good to be physically fit. It's good for your mental health. It's better than antidepressants in some ways. It's an all-natural cure. And I know for me, it's helped to first develop a social life. So I have a lot of friends that I know that's our friendship started with running. It's helped to help me to work out some of life's problems. It's given me the time to think things through and mm-hmm. how I'm going to solve this problem or that. And it's also helped in many ways to for me to develop more creativity in my work. When I think about some of the clients that I work with and some of the issues that they're facing, and I think about how am I going to address this? And I come up with more creative ideas on how to help my clients.
That's really, really interesting. And I like what you're saying about kind of all the various ways it's enriched your life, because I do think that people who don't run think of it as maybe being really painful, like physically painful, and also lonely. They might see someone out running by themselves. And I think what you're saying kind of counters that, that it builds strength in the body, it builds stronger connections, and also just this idea of kind of expanding the way you might think about whether it's problem solving or creativity. So I think those are great insights, and absolutely other individuals who've come on the show have shared some of the takeaways like that. Lastly, I just want to ask you before we get into kind of the rapid fire round. On our break, you mentioned that you competed in the World Snowshoeing Championship. And that just sounds like something I have to ask you about. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was the year that I did it. I went up with my ex and also some very good friends from Marblehead. Mm-hmm. And one of those friends in particular was an elite runner. Mm-hmm. And so we went up there, we competed. I remember being at the starting line, and I didn't do very well, by the way, but.
Well, it was, you were a world, you were the world.
Yeah, I was there. I was at the starting line, and we were so cold. But one of the things about snowshoe running is you get hot really, really fast. Mm. So if you're overdressed, forget it. So we're standing there, I think probably one or two layers at most. And it was, I can't tell you how cold it was. It's in February because they have a whole festival around this. But we did, it was a really, really tough race. They have a lot of snow there. And it was really tough. A lot of hills to, you know, going up is one thing, but coming down, it's kind of treacherous even on snowshoes.
Interesting.
You end up on your butt sliding down a lot of times. And of course, they have photographers catching all of this, but okay. but that was one of the great experiences of my career too. And just being up in Quebec City is so beautiful. And people up there, you think it gets cold here? They don't care. They're out there enjoying it. They're making the most of it. And I think that's how people have to be with the winter. Bite the bullet, get out there and do whatever you can to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And you know, again, I'm someone who hasn't done the snowshoe racing, but this has kind of inspired me. Maybe that's going to have to go on my my list someday to try that.
It really is just one foot in front of the other. It's easy. It is. I mean, it's a heavy load. It's more difficult than regular running, but it really is just one foot in front of the other, and you get used to it fast.
Sounds great. Mm. It sounds great. Do you have like a favorite? So these, I always like to ask kind of some rapid fire questions, but do you have a favorite running shoe or maybe a favorite running snowshoe?
Okay. Well, I have Dion snowshoes. I wouldn't buy anything else, honestly. But in terms of running shoes, so for the roads, I have couple favorites, Nike anything and Mizuno Wave Horizon.
Okay.
And trails, Peregrine 12, Saucony Peregrine 12.
Nice. I'll put all that in the show notes in case folks want to look up those brands. How about a favorite tech item? Are you someone that wears a Garmin or some kind of Apple Watch or a headlamp?
I have three tech items that I rely on.
Oh, let's hear it.
I have to have them, except I eliminate one when I'm racing, and those are my Powerbeat Pro headphones. I had earbuds, actually. Yeah. Powerbeats Pro. I have to listen to music when I'm on a training run. If I'm racing, no. Or if I'm running on a trail, I won't wear those. But I have to have those, and they're fabulous. I just love the way they work, and I love listening to music. Sunglasses.
Ah, okay.
I have to have sunglasses. My favorite's Maui Jim. Mm-hmm. And then my Fitbit Sense.
Okay.
So I need those to go, all of these things to go on a run.
Okay. Well, we will add that into the show notes. And no one's mentioned the Fitbit Sense. So is that a heart rate monitor or a mileage tracker? Does it connect with like a Strava, like a Fitness Pal app, so you can see like a map when you get back?
It's got an app.
It's got an app.
Yeah. Fitbit has its own app.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So you can track that. All right. Those are great items. How about, do you have a race on your someday list that you haven't done that you really want to do?
Boy, I think I've done them all. Honestly, I do not have a race on my bucket list. There are some I like to return to,
mm-hmm.
and I plan on doing that. Like Market Square Day, I do every year. So
nice. Yeah. And that is coming up, I believe, in June.
That's second Saturday in June.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And what, you know, just sticking on Market Square Day. So, right, it's here in Portsmouth. People put out like little hoses of water if it's a hot day. It's just a really well supported race. A lot of great spectators. And I don't know if it still does, but it used to finish right there in Strawberry Bank. So
it
a really pretty spot for family to gather when you finish. And I don't know how many participants, but it's a pretty good size race. It might even sell out.
I think it does. And pre-pandemic, I think they limited it last year to 250.
Okay.
So I didn't really run it last year, to be honest, because of the whole pandemic thing. But what was I going to say? So it's usually over 1,000, I think. I think it might be 1,200, something like that. Yeah.
And certainly very competitive, you know, competitive runners. That's for sure.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yes.
So my last question is, what do you say to yourself when the going gets tough?
Okay. So this is where your listeners are going to put their hands up to their ears.
Okay.
James Brown. I feel good. I knew that I would. I feel good. I knew that I would, even when I'm feeling bad.
Well, Diane, it's been so nice to have you in the podcast studio, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
To our listeners, you have been listening to the 50 States Finish Line podcast. You can find episodes on all podcast platforms. And until next time, I hope our listeners feel energized about planning their next race. Happy running. Diane, thank you so much for coming in the studio.
Thanks for inviting me.